You're listening to The Philip Jordan Show.
Wake up! Welcome in, everybody, on this Thursday morning to another edition of The Philip Jordan Show. If you're watching on YouTube, coming from Studio B, I am, of course, your host, Philip Jordan, the in-studio host and producer for Dutton Woods Football on 96.9 The Legend and Auburn writer for Last Word on college football. On today's show, I'll be joined by Dan Peck from ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. We'll talk some Auburn basketball, Auburn spring practice and football, and also some women's Troy's basketball, because Dan is the play-by-play broadcaster for the Troy women's basketball team as they head out to Pensacola for the Sun Belt Conference Championship tournament. So we will be talking about that with Dan. Of course, we got a lot of news. We got some Nick Saban stuff to talk about. Why did he retire? Chris Lowe from ESPN had a big article on that that came out on Wednesday. We will discuss that and some other headlines going around the Southeast, college football, college basketball, just a bunch of interesting stuff to discuss on today's show. You can check out the Philip Jordan Show podcast over at wiregrassdailynews.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please follow, rate, and review. Leave a review, and I will read it on a future edition of the show. And if you leave just 4 stars, you are just a straight-up hater. You can email me at sports.philipjordan@gmail.com. Everybody joining me on the phone today is Dan Peck. You can check him out Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 on The Drive on ESPN 106.7, also over at the Auburn Observer. And he's the Troy women's basketball play-by-play broadcaster. And, Dan, I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, no, thanks for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely good. A lot of good things to talk about with Auburn right now. We got basketball, of course, on Tuesday night. They got a victory. I actually threw me off, Dan, them playing on Tuesday. I kind of got used to the Wednesday night Auburn basketball. I don't know about you.
It was a Tuesday night game, and it was a late Tuesday night game. And schedules can be a little bit in flux during the end of the regular season. You know, some places have already started their conference tournaments. But yeah, it was sort of an odd night. I kept thinking, like, oh, did Tennessee already play, or is Tennessee, are they? And then it's like, no, that game is tomorrow. You're on this is the Tuesday slate of the Tuesday Wednesday matchups in the SEC.
Yeah, when I first asked you on last week, their schedule, I just assumed they were playing a Wednesday night game. Did you look schedule? But they beat Missouri 101-74. Of course, Missouri, worst team in the SEC. You know, have not won a game the whole season. It was kind of close though there in the first half. Second half, Auburn opens up with a 10-2 run and they outscore 57-35. But what was kind of like your big takeaways from Auburn's win over Missouri on Tuesday?
Yeah, so Bruce was trying to warn people that even though Missouri's win-loss record, and especially their conference record, is well below average, they're, you know, like you said, they're winless in the conference this year. But they've played a lot of close games. They had Tennessee on the ropes late. It was senior night. You were going to get a kind of a desperate version of Missouri. And for much of the game, that's how it played out. It just... ultimately, if you're a team like Missouri, we talk about this a lot on The Observer, you know, the recipe for an upset. If you're a team like Missouri, you need to play so well in the first half of a game like the one last night, because they need to build a lead and be able to pad that lead, because a second half surge by Auburn feels kind of inevitable. I mean, the depth difference between these two teams is staggering with the injuries Missouri has had. And Auburn was the better roster going into the season, but then Missouri has lost some pieces of the rotation due to injury. And now Auburn, they showed the graphic last night. Auburn is fifth in D1 basketball and bench points this season. I mean, it's one of the secret weapons of this Bruce Pearl team is that they can play at this pace and keep it up, because they're going to the bench and they're bringing in players that don't represent much of a drop-off, and they can play those bench pieces enough that the starters don't get overextended. There are so many places in college basketball where Jahni Broome would be playing 35, 38 minutes a game, And then Auburn, he's playing 27. And, you know, the 26 and a half in conference play, maybe a little more than that after the Jalen Williams injury, but it's under 30. And that's because Bruce Pearl can go to his depth, and his system requires that Auburn do that. And Missouri in the second half, when Auburn got rolling on both sides of the ball, Missouri just had, they had no answer. They were already fatigued. They were already, they were already utilizing their bench pieces. They didn't, it was checkmate. They didn't really have an answer. And the final score reflected that.
Yeah, it did. It's just been amazing. You know, Bruce Pearl talked about before the season, too, the depth that Auburn would have. And it's like, you know, maybe you can line their starters up with some other team starters. Okay, maybe they have a little bit better start lineup. But then when you go to the bench, I'm like, nobody's going to have – most teams are not going to have the bench that Auburn has. And like I said, it's not a huge drop-off when they do go to the bench. I'm like, Dylan Cardwell, I mean, that's a great player there as well. I mean, and then the energy that KJ Johnson brings on any time he enters the floor is quite amazing for him, too.
And there's something to be said about the character of people like Dylan and Chris Moore, and I would put Trey Donaldson in that mix too, because they knew based on the way that the offseason had gone that they weren't going to have heavy minutes on this team. And those are all players who could have gone into the transfer portal and they could have stayed in major conference college basketball. And they could have gone somewhere else where they were going to play more. And for them to stick around and decide that their future should remain, you know, they should remain at Auburn, they should remain on the roster, they should play whatever role it's decided is appropriate for them. Chris Moore's minutes, I mean, it's crazy. This is a guy who will play, he'll start and play 25 minutes in a game, and then we'll see him in the game just this past weekend when Auburn, and it was Mississippi State where Chris Moore barely featured. Or maybe it was the game without Jalen. But there was a game where Chris Moore played very few minutes recently. And he's somebody that everyone on the team acknowledges he's ready. And it's just a matter of, you know, Auburn hasn't necessarily needed him to step up and take a key role this year. But he's a really important piece of the team in the minutes that he does play. So, I don't know. It's a testament to, on top of the fact that it takes a certain kind of player to buy into Bruce Pearl's system, it always has. Now you have an era in college basketball where players have so much freedom to leave. And for a guy to volunteer to stick around and be a bench piece, for a veteran to volunteer to do that, shows you, I don't know, it's a special group that Bruce Pearl has assembled with this Auburn roster.
Yeah, it's you know, testament to him too as well. Players want to be a part of that, stay and be a part of what he's got at Auburn. And obviously, this Saturday will be the final game for the SEC tournament, the last home game of the season. They'll be hosting Georgia, 5:30 SEC Network. Just what would you like to see out of Auburn on Saturday?
Well, I mean, the team has shot the ball well. I know that the game at Missouri was a bump in the road in that regard, but it was amazing that Auburn had three straight games, including a game against Tennessee, who's playing as well as just about anybody in college basketball, where Auburn, I mean, to have a 40-plus percent three-point shooting night three games in a row, Bruce Pearl, I don't believe, had ever had a team in Auburn that did that in SEC play, three straight games where they shot the ball that well from three. Even the Jared Harper and Bryce Brown team, that at times felt like they never missed, those teams didn't have three straight games where they were 40-plus percent from three. So I don't know. I think that this team, they've shown a lot of qualities that lend themselves to believe it could be a second weekend NCAA team, a team that even if they're not one of the top four seeds on the board, you know, this could be a dangerous matchup in the NCAA tournament, especially in the first two rounds. You know, as far as what they, you know, you'd love to see the team remain healthy. You'd love to see Jalen Williams continue his, rounding into form after after the knee injury. Although he's looked pretty much like his old self of late. Anyway, you know, the loss of Lior is disappointing because he was somebody who brought a spark and a different kind of energy when he was out there, and when he would score, it, you know, felt like it really electrified the bench, and he was playing important minutes. You know, he was a guy who was, he was in the rotation there. So, you know, now Auburn has to figure out, you know, what exactly to do with the minutes without Lior Berman in the rotation anymore. But no, I think just, you know, continuing to see the solid point guard play, quality shooting, and the trademark defense that has made them so dangerous all year.
Yeah, so let's transition over to football. Of course, Auburn will have their spring game on April 6th. But this thing, I guess a lot of people, a lot of fans that are looking at quarterback, because obviously what we saw in the bowl game, Peyton Thorne, and then I think a lot of fans were like, why did they break in a quarterback? Also got Walker White coming in, Hank Brown, who was very impressive at the end of the bowl game against Maryland. For you, for this Auburn football team, what is the big spring storyline for you?
I mean, I would think that watching Peyton Thorne, although I don't know what kind of answers we're going to really get in the spring, you know, seeing Peyton Thorne continue to grow and leave his mark on the program. You know, I think he represents plan A for this Auburn coaching staff and this Auburn team at the quarterback position. You know, the plan A would be Peyton Thorne, who has played a lot of college football, and the other guys on the roster right now have played relatively none compared to Peyton Thorne when you look at Holden and Hank and Walker. And that's not to say, like, there's potential in that room. Any one of those guys could step up and make a push to be the starter. But I think it would be a real gamble for this Auburn coaching staff to go with Walker or Holden or Hank to start the year just because they're so inexperienced, especially compared to Peyton or anyone they could go get in the April transfer portal window. So I would think that plan A is Peyton Thorne holds on to his job, and with more cohesion at the offensive line and more talent at the receiver position and a full offseason as the starting quarterback, Peyton Thorne has his best football ahead of him. He plays his best football in 2024. If Auburn's coaches look at Peyton Thorne this spring and decide, you know, we need to go find a veteran option to compete with him or to come in and start, like, that would represent to me plan B or plan C. But yeah, I mean, you know, how does Peyton Thorne, you know, how does he continue to grow and develop? Luke Deal had a lot of really interesting things to say about Peyton Thorne. We were talking to players last week about how, you know, Luke Deal thinks that in this new era of college football, a lot of guys are in a position where in their second year, their first full year at a school, they can take a big step forward just because so much, you know, so much is taking your attention away from football, and so much is new and different when you switch teams as a college football player. Auburn has a ton of second-year guys, including Peyton Thorne, who, if that theory, you know, if there's something to that, you know, Auburn has a bunch of guys that could theoretically take a leap forward because, you know, they know what to expect as an Auburn football player, and now it's a matter of growing and developing and sharpening whatever you need to do to be a better player in your second year with the program.
Yeah, you know, I think some people kind of forgot. I mean, it was a year ago. I mean, he came in after spring of last year, too, and that probably set him back, too, as well, going into the season. I mean, I think getting those valuable reps, obviously, now with spring. And then just what's your thoughts, too, on how now Hugh Freeze fully being the play caller once again could impact his quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think Hugh Freeze is a smart guy, and I think if Hugh Freeze thought this offense was going to be worse in year two, I'm not sure he would have volunteered to roll up his sleeves and call himself the play caller. I think Hugh Freeze looks at a lot of the stuff I was just talking about, a veteran quarterback who gets to spend the full offseason with Auburn, an offensive line where you might not need to – I mean, they added Big Percy from Mississippi State, but that might be the last addition to this offensive line. They might get to spend the full a full offseason with at least four and maybe all five of the starters pretty well entrenched in Percy Lewis and Dylan Wade, Connor Liu, and Isaiah Tutal Miller. Those are, and we'll see what happens at right guard. But four of those guys feel like they're going to be the starters. And I would look at Tutal Miller as another, you know, just like we were saying about Peyton Thorne. Tutal Miller is a guy who, at times last year, you know, remember he came up from junior college and went from junior college to starting in the SEC. And at times he was raw. You know, I've had people describe his performance at times as he was in, you know, he was in over his head against top tier SEC pass rushers. That's a guy to me. And it's hard to pick a breakout figure who doesn't touch the ball. But I think Tutal Miller could make a big jump forward in his second year of major conference college football. And if Auburn has a proven SEC left tackle in Percy Lewis and a right tackle making a big leap forward in Tutal Miller, tackle has been a question mark at Auburn for so many of the last couple of seasons. That's been one of the storylines. And for Auburn to feel really good about its tackles, like, that's a reason why the play caller, whoever it is, whether it's Hugh Freeze or an offensive coordinator that he brings in, that's a reason for the play caller to feel very good about their chances of success.
Yeah, then obviously the offensive line works, quarterback's got time, and then now whoever's quarterback can get the ball into these talented wide receivers Auburn's got coming in that everybody's excited about.
And it's difficult. Peyton Thorne talked a little bit about how it's difficult for receivers jumping from high school to major conference college football. Even the best receivers maybe struggle to adjust to the speed of the game, the complexity of the playbook, the quality of the opponent, you know, the quality of the defensive back that they're facing. And so, you know, I want to be careful about how much to expect from the true freshman quarterbacks. But I think between bringing back guys like Jay Fair and Caleb Burton, who have received rave reviews from the leadership, the leadership council, the players that we talk to, who provide sort of guidance about these things. You know, Jay Fair, Caleb Burton, both guys who have gotten rave reviews this offseason. And then to bring in Lewis from Georgia State, who was a big play threat for a good passing offense in the Sun Belt. And I'm so intrigued by Sam Jackson because I remember getting ready for the Cal game last year, how explosive he seemed with the ball as a running threat playing quarterback for Cal. He's a guy who was a teammate of Peyton Thorne's in high school. They could have some chemistry from a long time ago. And I remember Cody Burns years ago talking about how switching from quarterback to receiver at the college level, especially if you're athletic enough to do it, your time as a quarterback has helped you understand defenses in a different way than your average receiver and made it easier to get open. And Cody thought that it, even though he was new to the position, he was able to bring some tricks as a quarterback with him that helped him get on the field. I think that might be the case for Sam Jackson, the Cal transfer as well.
You know, and, you know, leaving on the defense, all the assistants, you know, bringing DJ Durkin in, of course, Charles Kelly coming in as well as an assistant, Wes McGriff coming back. When you look at DJ Durkin, what are your expectations out of the defense?
You know, I wonder if my expectations would have changed no matter who they hired as defensive coordinator. So much of it seems to be based around the personnel. I think if you're talking about second-year players, you know, that seems like a common it's a pretty common refrain when you look at this Auburn team because they went to the transfer portal so much in Hugh Freeze's first season. But a guy like Keldrick Falk, right, like a breakout year for a five-star coming out of high school who played a lot as a true freshman, that would go a long way towards helping whoever is calling the plays for the Auburn defense. I'm really intrigued by Champ Anthony. Champ Anthony played, you know, he was a late arrival out of junior college that sort of, I mean, he took I think people were expecting Champ Anthony to have to wait a year while some other options got on the field. But Champ Anthony was kind of undeniable when you look at the young options Auburn had at corner, and he was the one playing often last season when Keontae Scott had to leave the field. So now Keontae slides over to corner, and I think Champ Anthony could step in and play a lot of those slot corner nickel snaps that were going to Keontae last year, and that's become maybe the I don't want to rate positions in terms of importance, but that position has become so much more important in the last few years of college football. The proliferation of the spread that used to be, you know, your third or fourth best corner would be the guy you'd play there in the slot, and now it's a unique skill set, and sometimes it's the best, most talented guy in the secondary is having to play that role because teams are increasingly putting one of their most talented players in the slot to match up with whoever's doing that. So yeah, I'm intrigued by what kind of sophomore season at Auburn Champ Anthony could have this upcoming year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, springtime is a great time. We get to see more of this. You know, a lot of people be excited to see spring. Even though we just don't see a lot, we still get excited to see the team out there on the field practicing and playing a spring game. Real quickly, last before I let you go, as I mentioned off the top, Troy, women's basketball play-by-play. Of course, the Sun Belt tournament is going on this week down in Pensacola. Troy will not play till 7:30 on Friday night, and they will play the winner between Louisiana and Arkansas State. Just going this tournament, what do you see as some keys for the Troy women to come out to win the Sun Belt Conference tournament?
Trojans have played very well in Sun Belt play this year. 15-3 would usually win you the league, but Marshall went 17-1 because of a quirk in the Sun Belt scheduling. Troy and Marshall did not play in the regular season this year. There's one team randomly in the 14-team league that you don't play in your scheduling based on the rotation. This year, Troy and Marshall did not play. So you've got 1-2 in the regular season having not played. They're both they're the two best offenses in the league. They're both very fast. They pressure you on both sides of the court. You know, for Troy, I think it's just a matter of taking care of the ball, playing your style of basketball, and remembering, I don't know, at times Troy can fall in love with the three-point shot or fall in love with long twos. Maybe the two best post players in the conference, two of the three best post players in the whole conference are Troy Trojans, Ty Porche and Jamia Sticks Hollings. And so I think if those two are able to produce, it's just tough for other teams in the Sun Belt to match up with Troy. Troy's got outstanding guards as well, but the posts have been the engine behind a lot of Troy's success of late. And Troy's playing their best basketball down the stretch. Maybe the two best games Troy played in the regular season were the two final games to close out the 24 season in the Sun Belt. So I think, Troy likes their chances going to Pensacola. Confident team. And we're going to see what happens at the Bay Center.
It just seems justified then that we get Marshall and Troy in the championship game on Monday then.
Well, you never know what's going to happen. It's tournament basketball. There are a lot of teams in the Sun Belt that would love to get hot. I always think so the top four teams in the Sun Belt get a bye to Friday, and everyone else has to sort of play their way to Friday. Five through 12, depending on the matchups, will play on Wednesday. But there might be an advantage to winning on Wednesday, seeing some shots going in. This is not really a basketball arena. It's more of a hockey arena that's converted to basketball. And so I always wonder if a team that's already played a game on that court has something of an advantage. And so there's also a week-long layoff for the teams playing on Friday. So it's a... It's been an unpredictable tournament in previous years. I think that the top four seeds should most likely be the teams playing on Sunday in the semifinals. That would be Troy, James Madison, Marshall, and Old Dominion. But a team like Southern Miss could make a run. They're probably going to play James Madison on Friday. There's an App State team that's playing as we record this If they win, they would get top seed Marshall on Friday. App State's been one of the better offenses in the conference. So I think there's the possibility for drama, but a Troy Marshall matchup on Monday in the finals would have a heavyweight title fight kind of feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be fun. Obviously, down here where I'm at, Dothan, we're always cheering on Troy and everything they do. And, Dan, it's been fun having you on. I've kept you a few more minutes longer than I told you I would when I reached out, but I appreciate you coming on the show. If the listeners, viewers want to check you out online, where can they find you and all the work you're doing?
All right, so I'm on Twitter, which I'm only calling Twitter. I'm on it at DNPCK. You can also find me on Instagram. I've vowed to get more active on Instagram this year, and I have posted once. So you can find me at DNPCK on Twitter and Instagram. The Drive is the show I do with Bill Cameron in the Auburn-Opelika market on the radio, 4 to 6 in the Auburn-Opelika area on ESPN 106.7, live on the Internet. At ESPNAU.com. You can also listen to the podcast. Just search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. Justin Ferguson has allowed me to contribute to the Auburn Observer. That podcast is available on your favorite podcasting platform, or go to AuburnObserver.com, find out how to subscribe. And like you said, I do the radio play-by-play for the Troy women, for the Troy women's basketball team. And so you can find them on Troy's official social media platforms. You can listen to games, TroyTrojans.com/watch, if you want to listen live. Like you said, I'll be Friday night, I'll be doing the game against whoever Troy's opponent is down in Pensacola.
All right, sounds good. Everybody go check Dan out. Go watch, listen to the broadcast for the Troy women in the Sun Belt Championship Tournament there. And, Dan, once again, appreciate the time, and I hope we can do this again sometime down the road.
Oh, absolutely, Philip. Best of luck, and thanks again for the invitation.
96.9, The Legend is your connection to classic country legend. But Digio Strategies has other options too. News Talk 103.9 is your source for America's top news and entertainment shows, like Rick and Bubba in the morning, Glenn Beck from 9 till 11 a.m., and Clay Travis and Buck Sexton middays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Sean Hannity, Lars Larson, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, and others fill your day with the latest news and views from America's top conservative voices. America at Night and Coast to Coast AM keep you company and connected throughout the night. Plus, Fox News, the Alabama Radio Network, and Wiregrass Daily News keep you informed with national, international, state, and local news. And with more musical choices like All the Hits, 106.7 KMX, Today's Country, 95.5 WTVY, and Music 107.7. Digio Strategies gives you more choices and more variety. Listen on air, online, and on our apps. 96.9 The Legend is just the beginning.
All right. Once again, thanks to Dan Peck for coming on the show. Check out him on The Drive Monday through Friday from 4 to 6. Of course, the Auburn Observer. And once again, Troy women's basketball this Friday night at 7:30 on ESPN Plus. If you want to watch it, but you can listen to him, as you heard there, as they try to win the Sun Belt Conference Tournament Championship. All right, so real quick before we get out of here, we're already at close to 30 minutes. Some news to go around from the last couple of days. We're actually going to start off with basketball here. I know everybody's wanting to probably hear talk about the big story that came out on Wednesday about Nick Saban, but first, let's look at some basketball stuff here. The Tennessee Volunteers clinched the SEC regular season title on Wednesday night by defeating South Carolina 66-59 on the road. Another big game for Dalton Connect. He had 26 points on 5 of 11 from downtown. Of course, on Tuesday night, Alabama did lose their second consecutive conference game by losing to Florida 105-87. Now, if Tennessee beats Kentucky, Auburn beats Georgia, Auburn has a chance. There's probably some other tiebreakers in there to finish second in the SEC, which would push them off to not playing until Friday, which would be key for Auburn. But we'll see what happens with Georgia. We'll see what happens during the weekend as well. Tennessee and Kentucky do play, which with Tennessee now clinching the SEC regular season title, the number one seed in the SEC. But also, they're still trying to get the number one seed in NCAA tournament. So, you know, they're going to be coming out trying to continue that stretch going. Now, on Wednesday, we had a massive article, very informative and eye-opening article from Chris Lowe over at ESPN. I'm going to read some of the quotes here from that article. Of course, it's talking about why Nick Saban retired, what happened there, what was the purpose of this. Of course, and it was kind of interesting in article too, because it says after the 22 season, Saban did form AD Greg Byrne that he was nearing the end of his Hall of Fame career. So he already knew, which you had to think, okay, Nick Saban, his age is getting closer to the end. So you always got to probably have that in the back of your mind. Okay, I have some names here. But really, the Nick Saban stuff is really the most intriguing stuff to me. In an article, it talks about after Alabama's 27-20 overtime loss to Michigan in the college football playoff semifinal on January 1st. So that was a hard one for Saban to digest. So not only was Saban upset about the way his team played, he was especially disheartened about some of the things that happened afterward in the Rose Bowl locker room and back on campus when he met with some players. One of the quotes in the article from Saban said, "I want to be clear that wasn't the reason, but some of those events certainly contributed." Saban talking about his decision to retire. "I was really disappointed in the way that the players acted after a game. You got to win with class. You got to lose with class. We had our opportunities to win the game, and we didn't do it. Then showing your butt," I'm going to edit some of the language here, "and being frustrated and throwing helmets and doing that stuff. That's not who we are and what we promoted in our program." Saban also goes on to say in the article, "I thought we could have a heck of a team next year, and then maybe 70 or 80% of the players you talk to, all they want to know is two things. What assurances do I have that I'm going to play because they're thinking about transferring, and how much are you going to pay me?" Saban recounted, "Our program here was always built on how much value can we create for your future and your personal development, academic success, and graduating and developing NFL career on the field." The Saban lastly goes on and said, "So I'm saying to myself, maybe this doesn't work anymore, that the goals and aspirations are just different, and that's all about how much money I can make as a college player. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's never been what we're all about, and it's not why we had success through the years." You know, and that's the thing, too, and I kind of wonder, too, as well, Nick Saban's probably, he's never going to come out and say NIL, transfer portal, all this stuff is the reason why he retired. But and at his age and everything goes on, coaches don't have a break. I mean, this stuff is hard on these coaches. And I can see Nick Saban look and said, "Look, my age, and then this is not the college football. Remember, I'm not saying it's good or bad either, but I can see where Nick Saban is coming from that standpoint of, look, this is what I'm used to. This is not what I want to be a part of." And, you know, Nick Saban, and I've said this multiple times, I've quoted Nick Saban on this a lot, talking about his comments, "Is this what we want college football to be?" And it still kind of lines up with that. So another quote, some stuff that come out of this piece here, it says people wanted assurances, if I could talk this morning, assurances that I was going to be here for 3 to 4 years, and it became harder to make those assurances. Saban also said in this article, "But the thing I love about coaching the most was the relationships that you had with players, and those things didn't seem to have the same meaning as they once did." And it's not with players coming and going as they want to. Now, obviously, and then go on into the article, it talked about how the targets for Alabama was Kalen DeBoer, obviously, who got the job, and Florida State head coach Mike Norvell. They were at the top of Greg Byrne's list. Both were what he was looking for, a proven head coach who'd won on a big stage and also shown propensity to develop players. Now, we all know Mike Norvell got a new contract and everything from this whole deal. But you got to think the Florida State fans really would have been, you know, scorched earth on that one if Mike Norvell had left to go to Alabama after Florida State fans feeling Alabama's the reason why they weren't in the college football playoffs. So that would have been a deal. So, and there's a lot of more interesting stuff. I'm not going to sit here and read the whole article and everything, but those are some things that stuck out to me. Of course, you can go to ESPN.com and check out that article. National Signing Day is changing, it appears. According to ESPN's Pete Thamel, the Collegiate Commissioners Association, the CCA, voted on Wednesday to move up the winter signing period to early December, which I'm all about, all for, which means it would take place before the transfer portal. Thama also noted the group chose to push back a vote on the potential of having three signing days until they meet in June. Not 4 to 3 signing days. Such a format would have signing days in June, November, and February. However, the new period will start on December 4th, 2024 and run through the 6th. And then the transfer portal would open up on the 9th. I'm for this. And I was, you know, here, Weiger say the news, 969. Also, if we cover high school football, the two being at the same time, I think hurts high school recruits. I do believe that the portal, because a coach may say, well, do I want to go get a high school kid or do I want to go get somebody I've seen play college football? Portal, but now this is there. It's going to put more, I hope, more of an emphasis on the high school recruiting, high school players, and then hey, what you don't get maybe on that early signing period, and then which really is the national signing day. Let's be honest here, and then go get what you need, what you probably didn't get out of that out of the portal. So I think that's really the way to go. So this is something I didn't get into. It's actually news that was on Tuesday. I could have talked about, but had so much going on with that show. Arch Manning, of course, opting out of the NCAA college football video game. Now, this comes from Orange Buds, who that's a website that covers Texas. I hope I'm pronouncing the name right. Anwar Richardson put a tweet out. Multiple people had told me Texas redshirt quarterback Arch Manning will not opt into the EA Sports College Football 25. He said, I'm told Arch is focused on playing football on the field. Then there was another article come out about this. Reportedly, he wanted to wait until he was the guy before appearing in a franchise, a source told Mark Slaybaugh. EA Sports has offered athletes $600 and a free copy of the game if they do opt in. So, does Arch think you get transferred in the game or something? I don't know. Somebody explain to him. I mean, he doesn't know how this thing works, right? I mean, I don't know. It just don't make sense. None of it makes sense to me, what he said or any of this stuff about this. So, I don't know. And people are just going to create them anyways. So, go ahead and get your $600 and everything. But, yeah, I don't know if Arch really knows how the whole video game thing is working for that. All right, and that's it. That's all I have for you on this edition of the Philip Jordan Show. Be back next week. Got some more stuff coming your way. Plan on doing a Monday podcast. So you should have something in your feed on Monday morning. Anyways, remember you can follow me on social media at PJordanSEC. The podcast is available Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please follow, rate, and review. Leave a review. I will read it on a future edition of the show. And if you leave just 4 stars, you are just a straight-up hater. You can also check out the show over at WiregrassDailyNews.com and the Wiregrass Daily News Facebook page. You can watch the show over on my YouTube channel, Philip Jordan Sports. Please do that. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell for all notifications. Please leave a comment on the video and also read those on a future edition as well. You can always email me at sports.philipjordan@gmail.com. And you can read all my written work over at Last Word on college football. I'll talk to you guys next week. Until then, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Philip Jordan Show. Subscribe to the audio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can watch the show over at the Philip Jordan Media YouTube channel. Got a question or topic idea? Email the show at sportstalkphilipjordan@gmail.com. Join us next time for more great football talk.